Let's be honest. At some point or another, in different ways, we all lose it with our kids.
The things my kids do to drive me crazy, get in trouble all the time.
Our producer, Will Coley, went out in his neighborhood of Harlem to talk to parents about this.
One thing that my daughter does that drives me crazy is she's developing the word no now. So she's telling me no, like she actually knows what she's talking about.
So asking too many questions and the same question over and over and over again. How many stops are we gonna make before we go home? Is this the last stop? Are we going home?
When they hide stuff from you, something serious.
Like what?
Like when your daughter is hiding a guy from you. That's one thing that a father should know. The father should definitely know the guy that she's hanging out with the most.
Jump around too much. I need them sitting down quietly.
Keeps repeating mommy, 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 mommy for no reason.
Leave their toys out. I'm always stepping on the toys and I'm about to kill myself.
And you just lose it there?
Yeah. Close to death will make you. Being close to death will make you lose it.
I learned from the therapist and things how to not just lash out. You know, I take breathers, I calm down, I relax.
That. I need that. When my children drive me crazy, sometimes I raise my voice, or often my heart is racing and I get snippy. And my kids driving me crazy is less about what they're doing and more about whatever state of mind I'm in at the time. In those moments, my emotions are in charge instead of me. For some parents, maybe these incidents are easy to laugh at and move on from. Or maybe they're not at all, and you wish things were different. I do. For me, bedtime is my weak time of day when it comes to losing my cool. In fact, you might say that I have a bedtime problem. From 10% Happier, this is Childproof. I'm Yasmeen Khan. Today on the show, I get personal about when and how I lose it with my kids. And if, like me, you're trying to work on this, you'll want to hear my conversation with someone who's expert in, as she calls it, the shit we need to do to not lose our shit. Stay with us.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Welcome back. For me, the time of day where I lose my cool the most is bedtime. I don't mean the stories and hugs and kisses part of bedtime. I mean the period after dinner, leading to bedtime, where the energy goes up.
For heaven's sake, the butt smacker, Dino Show!
This is when my two daughters, who are 7 and almost 4, get super silly. Sometimes there's playing between sisters, sometimes fighting. There's lots of flopping around. I mean, it's regular kid energy. I just have a hard time with it. And I'm not even managing the kids by myself. My husband, Alex, is heavily involved, often taking the lead on getting the kids ready for bed, because he's more patient than I am.
This is not working. This is not working. This is not bad.
I recorded a bunch of nights of this over a few months. And listening back to the tape, my girls don't even sound crazy. But what it feels like in my head is chaos. You know that opening scream in the song Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses? That's what I imagine coursing through my body. Sometimes I yell, on these nights when my kids are loud and it takes so much prodding to do basics like put on pajamas. Or I'm just extra stern, barking orders at them. On one particular night, I didn't raise my voice, but I still feel like I kind of lost it. That's my younger daughter, playfully mocking me here. It sounds funny now, but at the time, I snatched the recorder and angrily left the room.
See you tomorrow.
Good night, Mama. See you tomorrow.
I assume some wild bedtime energy is a normal aggravation that happens at other people's houses, too. I'm not feeling that there's anything unique or particularly egregious going on here. But I don't feel in control. My bedtime problem is what prompted me to start learning about mindfulness practices about a year ago and to try meditation. I wanted to be less reactive. And I just want to add here that I realize the fact that I can even talk openly about yelling or losing it with my kids means I am incredibly privileged. Let's face it. I know that my parenting is not going to be judged the same way that parents from marginalized communities are judged. But losing our tempers happens to just about every parent. So I want to own how it's happening with me and talk about how I'm trying to wrap my arms around the issue. I connected with a licensed clinical social worker named Carla Nomberg. She wrote a book with the very on-point title, How to Stop Losing Your Shit with Your Kids. She was writing from personal experience, too.
I was yelling at my kids all the time. I was losing my shit with them every single day, multiple times a day. I felt completely out of control. I felt incredibly guilty and ashamed. And I was completely convinced that I was the only mother who was doing this. And it didn't matter that around that time, a huge New York Times article came out about how, like, yelling is the new spanking.
Uh-huh.
And our generation is a generation of yellers instead of hitters. Even after reading that article, I was like, no, I'm the only one.
And can I ask, how old were your daughters at this point? Still pretty little.
Oh, they were probably either 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, something like that. They were quite young. And that feels even worse, I think, because when a teenager is mouthing off to you, there is, I think, more of a sense that you're on more of a level playing field. But when you're screaming at a toddler who clearly does not have a functioning prefrontal cortex in their brain, who clearly can't make a better choice, that just feels really shitty, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. There's just that extra layer of like, wow, I might as well be screaming at a kitten.
When did it register? Like, what would come up for you then when you were out of the eruption, when you had yourself back together?
So it would either register when one of them started crying, and that would really instantly tear me out of the moment, and I felt horrible. Or, you know, when I yelled at them, they would start behaving. And that's not because this is a particularly skillful way to get your children to cooperate. It's because they were scared, and that's obviously not what I want for my kids. So they would cry or they would cooperate, essentially. You know, there's a release in yelling, right? The yelling happens because we're triggered, because our nervous system sort of goes into high alert and wants to do something. And, you know, most people think of fight or flight.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work in the moment. I wasn't fighting with my kids physically. That's why yelling kind of feels good in the moment, because you're getting all this pent up energy out of your body. So when I would get it out, then I would feel that release. And inevitably, I'd go to the kitchen and put my hands on the counter because there was something about my palms on the counter that calmed me down.
Huh.
And then I would stand in the counter and think about what a shitty mother I was. And the moment would kind of pass until it started again, because the truth is nothing had changed, right?
Like a lot of parents, Carla found herself caught in this cycle. Lose it, feel a release, calm back down, feel guilty.
And I sat down at the computer and I opened Google and I typed in, how do I stop yelling at my kids? And bear in mind, at this point, I had just finished a PhD in clinical social work, which is an advanced degree in basically complicated feelings and confusing thoughts. Like, I should have known this, right? And instead, I'm literally Googling. And I found all of these listicles, essentially, just top 10 ways to stop yelling at your kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I read through them and I made my little list and I wrote it down. And that lasted, I don't know, maybe 24 hours. And then I lost my shit with them again. So I was like, I'm going to go to the academic literature. And so I Googled all these fancy phrases like emotional regulation. And I found a bunch of articles. And at the end of a lot of them, it said, these parents would probably benefit from some mindfulness training. That was the beginning of things changing for me. And I learned some very specific ideas and some very specific strategies that changed my whole perspective and gave me the tools I needed in the moment to get a clearer sense of what was going on and to behave differently in difficult moments. At that point, I had read pretty much every parenting book on the planet. And they all said, oh, and the parent really needs to stay calm in this moment, whatever the moment was. And then they would move on. And I was like, that's the thing. That's the thing I need. I don't know how to do that. So when I went to started learning about mindfulness practices, that was the piece that actually was like, here is how to get calm. Here is the thing you need in that moment.
I really leaned into this part of the conversation because this is what I'm trying to practice now too. We're talking about basic techniques like breathing, developing an awareness of all this stuff that's on your mind, including this idea that your thoughts are just thoughts, not necessarily reality.
The possibility that I don't have to believe everything I think was huge. So all of these postpartum anxiety thoughts about like, today is the day my kid's going to die, which I would think all the time, or I'm a shitty mother. You know, you think something enough, you start to believe it, and then it becomes your reality. And the thought that I don't have to believe all these thoughts was like, oh, and then I don't have to fight with them. And I don't have to go through cognitive behavioral therapy to restructure them. I can just be like, huh, that's a thought. I also start to notice when I am triggered. And I can tell you exactly now what it looks like for me. It took years for me to get there. But when I am triggered, my shoulders go up. And if you put your shoulders up right now, it's really awkward and uncomfortable and weird. And you would think that if your shoulders are up, you would notice it. And yet I was walking around with my shoulders up by my ears for hours and not noticing it. I also start having fantasies about going to Staples. Other big box stores will work, like Target is good. You'd think I would fantasize about going to the beach, but for some reason, that's not where my brain goes. And I'm like, oh, I just wish I was in Staples looking at notebooks and pens.
That's calming and for you?
No, no, no. That's not calming. That is a sign that I'm triggered.
Oh.
This is where my brain goes when I'm about to lose my shit. It's like, I need to get the fuck out of here and I need to go to Staples. Also, the other trigger for me is when I start answering my kids in very clipped one-word answers. Yes. No, fine. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right? That's pretty obvious that I'm on the edge to other people who are listening. To me, I didn't even realize it was happening.
For me, a trigger is being underslept, which feels like a silly thing to say because exhaustion is basically every parent's baseline. But my conversation with Carla turned in this direction on lack of sleep because she's adamant that no matter how great your meditation practice is, you can't function if you're tired. I realize this is news to no one, but it's important to say out loud.
And the way I think about this is I want you to imagine, Yasmin, that you go out one morning and you go to get in your car and you see your car has a flat tire, like a straight up, you know, rim on the ground, flat tire. So you have two options. You can say, okay, well, we got to pause the day and I got to wait and I got to call AAA and they're going to come and, you know, the whole day is disrupted, but we have to deal with this now. Or you can say, screw it, I'm too busy. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to drive on the flat tire. You'll probably still get to where you're going, but the trip will be a whole lot slower and less pleasant, incredibly bumpy. You'll probably be yelling at your kids for most of it because you're all stressed out. And so none of us do that, right? None of us would walk out into the driveway and get in the car with three functioning tires and drive off to wherever we're going. And yet that's essentially what all of us are doing every single day when we're trying to function when we're exhausted. It's like we're driving around life with a flat tire, a really flat tire. And sometimes there are things we can do to fix it. And sometimes all we can do is have a whole lot of compassion for ourselves because it's so hard.
Yeah. I don't see the exhaustion as a solvable problem anytime soon for me.
No, I don't either. And so there are strategies we can use, especially in the evenings when we're super tired, that will help mitigate the exhaustion a little bit. But self-compassion is really has been a game changer for me. Mindfulness and self-compassion because I just have to find ways to forgive myself, because sitting there thinking I'm a shitty parent doesn't help anything. And it's not true. I can yell at my kids and that doesn't make me a shitty parent. It means I had a bad moment, right? It means I'm an imperfect human. Okay, well, we all are. So let's figure out a way to be kind to ourselves about that.
Okay, before we move on, can you please tell me what the tools are for when you're sleep deprived?
Yes, would you like to know?
Yes.
Yeah, there's so many. My favorite one to talk about is single tasking, doing one thing at a time. So we were raised in a culture that glorifies multitasking. How many times have you seen a job description that says ability to multitask required, right?
Yeah.
So we were raised to believe that this is a skill we should actively cultivate. Here's the problem. It's not a thing. It's not a thing that the human brain does well ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so modern researchers call it task switching, which means our brains and our thoughts are jumping back and forth between various things, various activities, various thoughts, whatever it is. And there's always a lag. Mm-hmm. And this idea that we have multiple balls up in the air at once stresses us out. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can handle it. Maybe we can't. But when we are stressed, we truly believe we can't. And the more we're trying to do it once, the more stressed we're going to be. So single tasking is a big, big strategy.
Single tasking. Got it. I am trying this already, and it's helpful. Like, I'm not reading a text while trying to monitor teeth brushing. But have you counted the number of single tasks needed to get kids into bed? It can feel like a mountain to climb. And I don't know that I can always muster the strength that's required of me.
I do!
It's Thursday. I am sitting down the hall from my kids who are yelling in the background. And I decided to sit over here.
Coming up, I give Carla a taste of what's going on at my house so I can get a bit of coaching. That's after the break.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back. I told Carla that I want to be calmer in general. Even if I'm not yelling, I don't want to always get wrapped up in how difficult or tiresome something is, because that ends up working against me. Bedtime, as you know, is what's top of mind these days. So I asked Carla for guidance on how to get through it without getting worked up.
It would be helpful, Yasmin, if you feel comfortable, if you could give me some more specifics about what that looks like for your family.
Well, to be honest, I think
I think what is happening with me is that I realized that I don't like bedtime.
Yeah.
I used to love it. It used to be such a cherished time of day before the pandemic, you know, like, well, one, because I would miss bedtime so much and like just getting home from work a little late, or I would get to be the parent that came in, snuck in, didn't have to deal with the pajamas and teeth brushing, but like got to sneak in for a story and a kiss. And I liked being able to bookend their day that way. And I thought that I loved bedtime.
Totally.
And then the pandemic happened and we were all at home and all that. And it's just like, bedtime went from being one of my favorite parts of the day to like my least favorite time of day. And maybe I have never accepted that. Maybe I've never just been like, okay, I don't like this part of parenting. So I'm just going to get through it. And I instead try to like enjoy it, but then it never works out. So maybe that's like the backstory for what is happening.
And what's the part about it? Like when you're losing it with your kids, are you yelling at them? Are you snapping at them? How would you describe your stuff with them?
Yeah, it's a range, I would say. So there could be yelling. There could be yelling like last night when I yelled at my daughter because she like did something innocent, but whatever. She started the water. This is, again, like I said, it sounds ridiculous to say this out loud when it's outside of the context of the moment, but she started the shower. And she didn't get in for many, many minutes. And my younger daughter was having a meltdown. She was like having a total tantrum. And actually, my husband was getting really frustrated with her. And I told him, like, let me handle it. Which was, I guess, a mistake because I have my younger daughter on my hip that I bring upstairs. And I discover that my older daughter hadn't gotten in the shower yet. And I got mad at her. I said, get in the shower. So there's some yelling or sharp talking. And then there's sometimes where it's like not yelling, but it's just very like drill sergeant-y, you know, I'm just like barking instructions, setting time limits, setting a timer, you know, counting down 10 seconds, 10 seconds, you've got to have your pajama bottoms on. And it's like, I don't like myself in those moments.
So I'm noticing how I'm feeling as you're talking about all this, and everything you said resonated so deeply with me. Like I'm imagining if my daughter had turned on the shower and then was like screwing around in the bathroom and not getting in, which by the way is absolutely on point for one of my daughters. Yeah, that would irritate the crap out of me. And I had this moment where you were describing going upstairs with your crying kid on your hip, and you go upstairs and the other child hasn't gotten in the shower. And I just felt the energy drain out of my body. Mm. Like, oh, you know, I'm here in a studio. There's no kids around me. And I could just imagine that moment. Now, as a parent coach, what I would say to you is, Yasmin, that sounds about right. That sounds like bedtime. I don't know what the problem is. Mm. As a parent coach, I would say you're doing fine. I don't think you need to change anything except your perception of that, which is, of course, the hardest thing to change. As a fellow parent and mother who has like wept over how hard bedtime is, I can be like, oh man, that sucks. I totally get why you want to change it.
Well, I don't want to yell at them.
Yes. And so let's talk about the yelling, because I do think the yelling is a tricky thing, because I think we parents have this notion that we always should be calm and happy and peaceful with our kids. And I don't buy into that at all.
Hmm.
I think that's not real life. I think it's not preparing our children for the world where people have real feelings. I think it makes it hard for us to show up in relationship in real ways. And obviously showing up for a 3.5-year-old is very different from showing up for a 14 or 15-year-old, right? The problem is when the yelling feels more chronic and constant, and it's confusing. Mm. Like, let's say your kid spills some cereal and you just freaking explode. Because maybe when you were a kid, that's what your parents did when anything was spilled. So an explosion over spilled milk is a little confusing to kids. And because kids are very self-centered and egotistical, and they tend to see everything in the world through the lens of their own perspective, and that doesn't mean your kid's a psychopath, it just is, it's a developmental thing that's very normal. They don't know how to make sense of this moment when the parent absolutely exploded over spilled milk. And so they assume it's a problem with them.
Yeah.
But Yasmin, when you describe nighttime to me, I'm like, yeah, it's not super pleasant, but it sounds about right. But it's not working for you.
Right. Well, I feel like I overreacted last night. Like the yelling, like the drill sergeant stuff or whatever, it's not great, or I don't love it at least. But I, you know, when in the moments where I'm like, I have an overreaction and I see my daughter's face fall, you know, that's when I feel like I have an issue that I need to solve.
Yeah. It feels awful. Yeah. So how do you think you should be handling this? Like, let's say you're in this moment where you've got a crying baby on your hip and you go upstairs and your distracted kid hasn't gotten in the shower. How would you like to be handling that?
Well, how would I think I would rather handle it as like a calm seriousness, you know, almost like when, you know, how you differentiate in your book about you have a big reaction, maybe if like your kid is about to step out into the street or something and it's like, whoa, you know, but it's kind of appropriate to the situation because it's like perceived danger. Those situations, I tend to be calmer because it's not like I am getting dysregulated. Maybe I'll like pull my kid back or something, but I can like get down on their level and say, no, this is dangerous. We do not step into the street.
Right.
I would like to react like that. in the situation where the shower's been running for 6 minutes and no one's in it, where I can say, daughter, number one, you should have been in the shower minutes ago. This is not okay. Like, and just say that. And she is a great person, honestly, and a thoughtful kid. And that might actually, you know, register with her more. But I become dysregulated in that moment. So that's not how it comes out.
Right. So here's what we know. We know bedtime is triggering for you. There's a million reasons why it could be triggering. For me, you know, some of my big triggering moments, dinner time, me alone at the table with two girls at dinner time absolutely triggered the crap out of me. And some work I did with my therapist helped me identify some childhood history stuff that was actually completely directly relatable to why I was being triggered at dinner. Also because everybody's tired. Also because I don't like cooking, so I get very annoyed when I have to prepare food. Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of reasons. Figuring out those reasons was helpful for me, giving me that insight. Insight is one piece. So there may be a piece of work you, Yasmin, might want to do to understand more about why bedtime is so triggering. Or you may not need to do that. It may be enough to say, you know what? I don't like bedtime. Mommy's not great at bedtime.
Yeah.
And so acknowledging that and just owning it can be so liberating. But to do stuff like that, you have to first notice, right? That
right.
You're triggered, that you're dysregulated. And it may be that you can just know that when dinner's over and it's time, you can just be like, all right, Yasmin, I'm triggered. I just am, you know?
Yeah.
And what we say about mindfulness is that being mindful is easy. Remembering to be mindful is the hard part. And that's true about triggering as well, right? Remembering that you're triggered can be hard. It can be hard to notice that. But just noticing it is the first step.
Okay.
The second step, you know, is all these little skills and strategies of doing one thing at a time, slowing down, because I hear and I totally resonate this like, oh, I just got to get through this. Let's just march through it and then we will be done. And so if we can notice that and instead shift it to, all right, I'm noticing how much I want this to be over. Mm-hmm. And instead, I'm going to take a deep breath and come back to the moment. And that is a practice. And it's harder to do when you're triggered, because when you are triggered, the part of your brain that does all that noticing stuff, your prefrontal cortex, isn't functioning as well. And your limbic system, which is like the stupid little toddler running around at the top of your neck, at the back of your brain skull, is running the show. And there's something about bedtime for you, just like there was something about dinner time for me, that your nervous system is automatically like, uh-oh, threat alert. And so you're already got some amount of these like stress hormones pumping through your body. And so when you can take the deep breaths and slow everything down, all of that sends a message to your nervous system and your body and all the things that there's not actually a threat. And I like to come back to the biology because I think it's a good way of reminding everybody that this isn't an individual person problem. This is like a human being wiring problem. Mm-hmm. This is an pretty much every parent I know problem.
Right. That's hard. It's hard to know that. It's hard to feel that.
It is. It is easy to hear it. It's easy to repeat it. And it's so hard to truly believe it. And so I keep saying it to parents because it's really, really important to know that you are not alone.
To that point, Carla says, here's the dilemma. Parents often feel like they're the only ones dealing with these problems. So they might turn to Google, like she did, and find themselves awash in lists of how to fix things. But all that advice can make us feel like everyone else has it figured out, except us. And that's a problem.
There are a million strategies out there, right? And sometimes the strategies just don't work. Often they don't work. And this is one of my big beefs with the idea of parenting experts and parenting advice. And I know this is a little rich because here I am writing parenting books and mouthing off about all this stuff, but bear with me. All of this advice leads many parents to believe that there are other parents out there who have nailed this, whose kids go to bed without a problem, whose kids put on their shoes every day as they're leaving the house without having to be nagged 27 times, whose kids eat their broccoli because the parents figured out how to serve the broccoli in just the right way. This is absolute bullshit, okay? There's so much advice out there. There is not a single parent, there is not a single family that comes through this unscathed. And so, yes, I can dish out strategies all day long, but at the end of the day, it's still so hard, and we still lose our shit.
Hearing Carla say this felt good. And I know this is true. But what are we supposed to do when we do lose our shit? How do we face ourselves and even try to get some insight into why we just came apart a little?
For me, it's all about self-compassion. You know, if learning that my thoughts weren't necessarily real and honest and true, and I didn't have to believe everything I think was the first game changer in my mindfulness practice, self-compassion was the second one. Self-compassion, there's really these three pieces to it. It's not sitting in front of a mirror throwing out like false, hollow affirmations. That doesn't work for me. If it works for you, I guess that's great. It doesn't work for me. But really, it's about, first of all, this mindfulness piece, noticing what's going on for you and not getting sucked up into it, not getting sucked into the judgment. So when I would stand at the kitchen counter and think, I'm a shitty mother, I'm screwing this up, a compassionate approach to that is, oh, there's that thought. It's just a thought. Okay. So I'm not judging myself. I'm not being like, I suck for having that thought. I'm just noticing I'm having that thought. The next piece is really this common humanity piece, which I've been trying to bring into our conversation, which is reminding yourself that you are not alone. And then the last piece of self-compassion is just kind self-talk. So when you notice that you're having all these shitty parent thoughts or whatever your brand of the shitty parent self-talk is, you respond with, actually, I'm just having a hard moment. And I can yell at my kids and still be a good mother. Or, whoa, I really lost my shit there. What do I need right now? Have I eaten all day? Do I need to pee? Am I exhausted? And asking yourself what you need and then tending to those needs is a deeply compassionate response.
Oh, God, that is so hard.
It's so hard. I mean, I just imagine this moment of you sitting down with them and being like, you guys, mommy just doesn't like bedtime. I love you guys so much, but you guys know I get really snappy. What do you think we could do about that? How do you think we could work as a team to make bedtime easier? And inevitably, they're going to come up with some really awful suggestions. They might come up with some useful suggestions, but probably not. But I wonder what it would be like to have that conversation with them and kind of model that there is this dynamic in our family that's not really working.
Yeah.
And they know it, right? They know it because they're kids and kids know what's going on around them and they know what's going on with their parents. So it's not like you're telling them anything they don't know. And just, you know, the four of you and being like, how do you think we could make bedtime easier? And I think the real reason to have that conversation is because everything feels less scary when you name it, when everybody can talk about it. Right. That's a great way of reducing shame. Let's just own up to the fact that mommy yells.
I like that idea of owning it and letting my daughters know that I overreact sometimes and that I'm sorry about that. In fact, Carla brought up the importance of apologizing, not for how you feel, but for the outburst or for saying the wrong thing. She said, first, get calm, and then apologize.
Shower, okay?
But I want to tell you.
I actually gave this a shot after that time that I yelled at my daughter for not getting in the shower. The next morning, I made her a card. This is a girl who's constantly slipping notes and drawn pictures under the door of my little office at home. She's pretty great.
This is Egg, and his best friend is Katara.
She's already in pajamas here, teeth brushed, introducing me to characters in the book Avatar. Even though there are nights when I do lose it, a lot of bedtimes sound like this. Calm, engaging. I'm just trying to make sure I can have as many of these evenings with my girls as I can. So I'm going to try my best and know that it may not go smoothly every single night, but hopefully most of the time. And that's pretty good. Today's show was produced by Palace Shaw and Will Coley. Our managing producer is Kimmy Regler, and our executive producer is Jen Poyan. Scoring and mixing by Matt Boynton of Ultraviolet Audio. Carolyn Packer Riggs wrote our theme music. Connor Donahue is our technical operations manager. Childproof is a production of 10% Happier. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It's a small way for you to help more people find the show. If you like our show, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. Episodes of Childproof are available free wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to hear new episodes 1 week early, you can download Amazon Music. Or if you want to hear new episodes early and ad-free, you can subscribe to Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app. Please support our show by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey.